Checker fit? Check, checker fit?
Chord, it was always in my head.
Checker fit? Check, checker fit?
Yes!
Rich the Education Gadfly
Sex,
Show.
Sex,
Mike and Rick tell you
early college, high school.
Know about education.
Pain and suffering. In your face, in your face, in your face.
Listen to the word that they be preaching, cause here's the Education Gadfly Show, yeah!
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, coming to you from edexcellence.net, here with my co-host, one of the few remaining undecided voters in America, Rick Hess.
Hey, Mike.
How are you, Rick?
I'm doing good.
Rick, you live in a battleground state. You must be very excited to vote next week.
Very excited.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Really?
No, not really.
Because you're not going to vote. I'm sorry, Rick, but just say again very briefly for our listeners out there why you think it's important for you not to vote next week in the big election.
A lot of people will be voting. What we need are some people who are at least a little bit disengaged from this process to try to be unifiers, help folks who are deeply wedded to one or the other of these guys, you know, actually have thoughtful conversations that go a little deeper than what you usually hear.
I see. So you're committed to backing fully whoever wins next week. So
no,
that's why you don't want to.
No, more the opposite. I'm ready to be discontented and a little grumbly about whoever wins.
Which sounds like a gadfly. You know, and today in the National Review Online, Rich Lowry had a piece talking about John McCain being a gadfly. But he had some very disparaging things to say about gadflies. Mm. He said the gadflies just flit about and don't have to actually get into substance because it's more about the posture they take.
Hmm.
I mean, I don't think that's a fair statement about all of us gadflies, do you think?
Well, it depends on the kind of gadfly.
Well, I don't think it's true for the education gadfly.
There you go.
But speaking of that, we do have a lot to cover today, including playing part in the gadfly. We're going to hear Amber's Research Minute. We're going to rate that reform. So let's get started. Christina, kick us off.
Topic one, Margaret Spellings has released new final regulations for No Child Left Behind that require states to use a common metric for measuring graduation rates and that would land high schools in deep water if they don't get enough of their students and poor, minority, special education, and English language learner students to graduate each year. Is this an overdue reform or overreach?
Well, how's this going to work exactly, Mike?
That's a really good question. Not well, in my opinion. So all kinds of changes today came out this week, I'm sorry, in the No Child Left Behind regulations. And, you know, some of them are, you know, you can argue are okay little tweaks trying to fix some problems with the law. On graduation rates, this is the biggest change. Not only is she going to make graduation rates more transparent by requiring every state to use a common metric.
Which determine, I'm fine with that part of it.
Which I think,
like that
I agree. I think that makes perfect sense. And not only requiring states to disaggregate graduation rates by these various subgroups, which again, I have no problem with.
I'm not crazy about doing graduation rates by race.
Okay, but what's going to happen is not only are they going to be transparent, but now in order to, for a school to make adequate yearly progress and not be determined to be a failing high school, you've got to get a certain percentage now, not just overall students, but African American, Hispanic, disabled, kids still learning English, to graduate on time. And I think what that's going to mean is we're going to have another perverse incentive for states to lower their targets in terms of how many of these kids had to graduate, and even for states to water down what it means to graduate from high school, because we do have these huge racial and otherwise gaps in graduation.
I mean, it would seem that there's a real disincentive here to try to set a reasonable graduation bar target. If 75 or 80% seems like for a lot of states a reasonable target, and you've got some of these sub pops are down in the 30s, that seems to create a real clear incentive for states to move that way down the ladder.
That's right. Sub pop. I like that.
Yeah,
but even more damaging than just targets, I still feel like, is the idea that states that are trying to move to make a high school diploma mean something, particularly by having high school graduation exam. I mean, this is a perfect incentive for those states to get rid of those tests.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a shame.
Maryland just is in the middle of this itself. So.
Exactly.
Topic two, with a deep recession looming, school districts are going to have to cut costs. What's the best way for them to do it? Is it true that collective bargaining agreements and the like keep them from cutting costs in a smart way?
Well, you know, a lot of us like to say that school systems are so inefficient, and part of the problem is in these tough times, they can't trim the fat like other organizations can. So, for example, they can't just fire their most ineffective teachers or administrators or aides because of collective bargaining agreements. And if they could, they could save a lot of money. I mean, what do you think, Rick? Is that true? Is that really where the savings are?
I mean, 80 to 85% of any district's budget is tied up in personnel and benefits. So the notion that you're going to get any meaningful savings anywhere else is crazy. You've got to save your money on personnel. Pension plans, unfortunately, because of the way we run these defined benefit pensions, are already underfunded. They're getting creamed in the market. So this is going to be a problem regardless. Basically, all you can do at the end of the day then is either try to get take-backs on contracts, cut cost of living adjustments, or lay folks off. And the reality is, of course, districts don't want to lay anybody off that they don't need to, and they're only going to do it by last hired, first fired, which creates real problems in terms of districts that have stepped up the caliber of the teaching force. So you get a lot of colas and a lot of sticking your thumb in the dike.
But do you think that's true? I mean, you've written a lot about how we blame these collective bargaining agreements, but really superintendents could do more if they wanted to. Is it that they're just afraid and not courageous enough to say, you know what, I'm going to really try to make it so that we're going to let go of the worst teachers and not the new teachers?
Sure. Well, nobody wants them to either. I mean, the reality is that if you've got average student class size of 21 or 22 and you're hitting a huge budget hole, you probably ought to be thinking about going average class size of 24 and 25. That's going to be the huge dollar savings. Any superintendent who puts that forward, except under extreme duress, is going to get hammered by the school board, by parents, and by local advocacy groups. So yeah, these guys tend to move cautious and tend not to look for the big savings. Mm-hmm. But frankly, they're partly not looking for the big savings because a lot of them, if they did push for them, except when they absolutely have to, are going to get chopped off at the knees.
Now, see, I know we're over time, but very briefly, you know, if we did the last hired, first fired here on the Gadfly Show, you know, we would say, well, we can't afford to have Amber's research minute. But how unfair would that be? Plus, we'd only save a minute. I mean, so that would be a ridiculous policy.
Although, you know, given the districts are pretty good, you know, at the end of the day, that's only cutting 5% in a lot of these places, right? The biggest cuts are maybe 10, 12%. A lot of them 5%, 1 minute, boom, problem solved.
Rick.
I'm just teasing. That's the best spin out of the show.
Last one. There's a debate brewing in Chicago around a proposed gay and lesbian high school. The idea is to provide a safe place for these students to learn, free from bullying. But Mayor Daley doesn't like the separate but equal aspect. Others have suggested a separate school for the bullies. Is this specialization gone too far?
It's, you know, at what point do you not get your own school? I mean, is it okay for, I don't understand. What are the criteria here? What are the criteria?
You mean, so you're saying, well, as long as you get bullied, if you're some class of students that gets bullied, then
is
you
it?
Deserve
so,
to have
so
your own
should,
school?
So should puny, ugly kids get their own school?
Well, maybe they should. A school for underweight children?
Under school or like for pot-bellied adolescents?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what are the criteria?
Well, you know, you've seen this in the news. There's a suburban middle school in St. Louis where some kids got in trouble because they had a Hit a Jew Day. Did you hear about this?
No.
No, this was terrible. And I hate to admit it, this was the school that I attended, Parkway West Middle School.
I think that's awful.
In Chesterfield, Missouri. It is awful. It's not clear yet whether the kids, there was something, it was supposed to be School Spirit Week, and there was a Hug a Kid Day, and there was this day, and then some kids are like, oh, we're going to Hit a Friend Day, and then somehow it morphed into Hit a Jew Day.
Well, I mean, it's certainly the case.
Which is terrible, but the question is, so now should there be separate schools for Jewish kids?
Or for Muslim kids.
Right.
I mean, these are certainly populations that get picked on. I mean, if the criteria is that if you get picked on, then one deserves a safe environment, it's not clear to me why sexuality ought to be a basis for protection, but not religion.
Right. And in some of these schools, it sounds like they're going to focus on studying gay history and gay culture. So, you know, learning about gays who have made a particular contribution to society.
And from an even-handed perspective, so that the concerns and critiques are going to be as prevalent as sympathetic accounts.
I think it's probably going to be fairly pro-gay.
This is the kind of thing that the creationists get beat up on.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, people say, look, if you're going to do it, one needs to do it from an unbiased, neutral, objective perspective, which doesn't sound what I'd expect.
All right, so Rick, thumbs up or thumbs down, pro or anti-gay high school?
Hey, citizens of Chicago can do whatever they want to do.
All right, Rick, on the one hand, on the other hand, Hess.
That's what I do, baby.
All right, that's all the time we have for Pardon the Gadfly. It is now time for Amber's Research Minute.
You search, we search, research. It's the Gadfly Research Minute.
Amber, welcome back to the show. I hope you
Thank
know
you,
we
Mike.
Were just kidding about that whole
cost-cutting
savings. Well,
I hope so. I'm doing my best every week trying to amp it up.
I know. And yet keeping to your minute-long budget.
That's right.
I like that very much. Well, your 1 minute starts now.
All right. We got a report out from Paul Hill's shop, the Center for Reinventing Education. The report's called Funding Student Learning. Got lots of high-profile academics working working on this report, like Jim Guthrie, Michael Kirst, Alan Auden. They have three primary premises. One, fund students and not programs. We hear about that quite a bit. Two, tie funding to student performance outcomes. And three, use a model of continuous school improvement, where you encourage innovative efforts, then use those to inform what's working and what's not in terms of how the money's being spent.
30 seconds.
Seems pretty logical, makes sense in an age of accountability. However, the report leaves lots of unanswered questions. First, in my mind, how in the world do you tie weighted student funding, which is what they're calling for, to reforming teacher salary schedules, since the bulk of our school spending goes to personnel? And also, the report overall was a little theoretical, little too academic, I think. They really could have used some applications to real school districts to illustrate their model.
Wow, Amber, very well
was
done.
Was that a minute?
You came
it?
In a few seconds under a Woo-hoo. Minute once again. So very nicely done. Okay, so what's our song for
our
this one?
Our song, we're talking about finance, we're talking about money. So we got a song by ABBA, Money, Money, Money.
Let's hear it. What I like about your song selection is that you have such a broad.
We had Japanese boy bands last week.
Yeah, I mean country music. I mean, I really feel
I'm a musical lover of just all different types of music.
Is that true?
Well, I always have. I'm waiting for a Frank Sinatra study. Like I've got like some study I can like get Frank Sinatra in there because mm-hmm. he's like my all-time favorite.
All right. Well, I think this could definitely happen. Well, thank you, Amber, for joining us on your Research Minute. Stafford, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Mike.
So you're going to rate that reform, is that right?
I am, and today I really am rating a reform rather than a crazy solution like the crazy bus driver who stopped her bus on the train tracks.
I hope that doesn't mean that this is not going to be funny.
I tried. It didn't have a lot of meat to it.
All right, well, let's hear it. What's going on?
Kids, they don't want to go to school. You know, they got to get up early. They're tired. It's just a lot of effort. And I mean, it is just so not cool to like ride the bus. So what do? You tell them to get their butts out of bed and go get their edumification. Or, if you live in California, the home of wishy-washy emotional discipline, you'll bribe them with a better form of transportation. And that's exactly what's happening in San Diego County, California. Students in the Sweetwater United School District have been getting some pretty sweet prizes for perfect attendance. iPods, laptops. But this year, the district really decided to up the ante. How so? Perfect attendance could get you a Mustang.
Ooh.
No, not the four-legged kind, although imagine cantering up to school in your noble steed, hair flowing, classmates staring, but I digress. This Mustang is of the motorized sort, a Mustang convertible GT. Can you believe it? And this classy ride was donated by one philanthropic soul who believed that kids need to go to school. You know what? A nice thought. And throughout the year, the car will be thoroughly reconditioned by automotive students, Southwest High, and painting and upholstering will be handled by adult education students. But hold your horses. Before you get too excited, keep in mind that this particular GT is a 1997, and according to EPA estimates, mm-hmm. this sweet ride will get you about 19 miles to the gallon. Mm-hmm. Gas prices may have dropped, but this car will probably be about as expensive as maintaining an actual Mustang, as in the horse. So I'll give him a B for problem definition. I'd say it's pretty important that we get kids in school. Mm-hmm. But as for execution, I'm going to give him a C. On the one hand, it's pretty neat that a group of automotive students will get to rebuild a car engine. On the other, this is bribery. We've talked about this with student pay. We're not going to rehash all of those arguments, and I suppose a superintendent doesn't really want to be seen driving around in this late 90s classic around the streets of Chula Vista, California, but bribing kids to do things that they should already be doing, you know, like going to school, is the worst kind of incentivizing.
All right, Stafford, thank you. Well, this is interesting. I'm surprised in California that they would get away with such a fuel-inefficient car, but I'm glad you picked up on that
Absolutely.
Piece of it. The other question is, you know, this attendance thing. I mean, as we move into an era where more and more learning can happen online, you know, and yet we really struggle with trying to figure out what does it mean to attend school when you're doing online learning. I mean, are those kids that are staying home to do some AP courses over the computer, do they qualify? And if not, I think that's a big problem.
That's very true. And how would you be able to to shirk the system. If you were just logging on, could you log on and then get up and go have a bowl of cereal? Would mm-hmm. that be, you know, leave the house for a couple hours while you're, quote unquote, in your online course?
Right. Not that anybody who works from home ever pulls that kind of answer.
Oh, of course not.
Never, never, never. Okay. Well, thank you, Stafford, for rating that reform. That is all the time we have for this week. And of course, this is our last pre-election gadfly show. We'll be back to you next week, and we'll, I'm sure, have lots to say about whatever happens on November 4th. Don't forget, don't be like Rick. Go out there and vote. Until next time, he was Rick Hess, and I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute at edexcellence.net, signing off.